Welcome to the Negro Leagues Are Major Leagues podcast, a production of Sports Reference. I'm your host, Curtis Harris, and today we are joined by Dr. Raymond Doswell, who serves as curator and education director for the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City. Dr. Doswell has worked at the museum since 1995, managing exhibits, archives, research, collections, and educational programming for the institution. Today we discuss how Raymond just got his interest in baseball in the first place, and also, of course, history. But then we also talk about the mission of the Negro Leagues Museum, how that mission hasn't necessarily changed over the years, but how they do that mission, how that has changed over time, and some of the importance of the collections and just the stories they tell at the museum. Raymond's a very thoughtful person. I enjoyed this very much, talking baseball and museums with him, and I hope y'all have a good time listening to it as well. Okay, so thank you for joining us, Dr. Doswell. Could you explain to the listeners what or how you got involved with Negro League baseball history, and what do you do at the Negro League Museum?
Well, thanks for the opportunity. So my training is in African-American history and in American history, as well as education. I'm a school teacher by training primarily. I attended Monmouth College in Illinois and then taught high school briefly before going to University of California, Riverside, where I learned about public history, i.e. museums, archives, and the like. And so that helped establish the possibility of having some museum-related credentials. We worked in learning about how to manage archives, how to preserve historic buildings, how to preserve artifacts, and the like. But I'm originally from St. Louis and the St. Louis area, and you kind of grow up with baseballs in your hand in St. Louis, so to speak. Not so much as a player or a young player, but a St. Louis Cardinals fan. The 82 Cardinals were one of the highlights of my youth in their World Series victory with Ozzie Smith and Keith Hernandez and those players. And that team's very special to me and my family as well. So I'm more of a baseball fan and a baseball historian per se. I was aware of the Negro Leagues and the Negro Leagues history, but not one to dive too deep into that history or our baseball history in general. But as someone who studies African-American history, you know, it's important to me, especially once I was able to get an opportunity to work here, to make those connections to the broader history. What I was discovering was that the Negro Leagues and baseball in general has a romantic connection to our American story, but baseball is not in a vacuum away from all the other aspects of things that are happening in America, wars, race relations, and everything else. So coming to the Baseball Museum has allowed me to make those connections for our visitors, for people interested in the history. In my primary role here at the museum, I'm the vice president. I'm the curator here, so help organize exhibits, both the permanent exhibits and in some cases the traveling exhibits from the standpoint of the content in those exhibits, with photography and things that we either have in our collections or we acquire, artifacts on display, organizing them to some degree, trying to build a library for the museum, and help with education programs, support marketing, go out and do public speaking. Have to be a bit of a jack of all trades and a master of none, but just know enough to be dangerous in every aspect and try to find answers. I wouldn't put myself on the level of any of the Negro League historians who have been working on the statistics, for example, but I do need to know where answers are and who might be best to answer questions for patrons or other historians or filmmakers or anyone who's interested in connecting to the history, know where resources are, and try to be a nexus point for both connecting people to the history and helping to interpret the history for the lay.
Yeah, no, I definitely sympathize with you on the public history stuff. I have a degree as well in public history, so, and I've worked at museums, so I know the struggle of
keeping collections together, trying to find stuff. Even if you don't know the answer, where can I go to find the answer? And being able to help out visitors with that kind of information, or researchers as well.
Well, one of the biggest challenges for us here at the Baseball Museum is mission creep, so to speak, in terms of baseball, because everyone wants you to be the authority on all things Black baseball, at least. And we strive to know as much as we can and know where answers are, but that gets us sometimes out of the scope of what we're supposed to really be focused on. And that is primarily really the Negro major leagues, and how they work, their business operations, their individual players, their ownership, and things like that. And as a secondary part of that is those players after integration and operations after the integration of baseball between 1947 to 1960. And obviously we're going to talk about the 1800s and the origins and things like that, but the rebirth of interest in Black baseball in general and the Negro Leagues has sparked many different communities, whether they had professional Negro League teams or not, to want to explore their African-American baseball heritage. And everything gets lumped in as Negro Leagues. And we know that it's much more nuanced than that, but the public doesn't. So it's a bit of a challenge to just kind of make sure that people understand what the differences are, the different levels are, and even how that relates to the modern game. And then people even understanding, unfortunately, that there is no more Negro Leagues, that ended, and there was a reason why it needed to end, and just understanding that. So a lot of education goes on every year. Sometimes it's the same questions every year, but that means that new audiences are coming to it. And so we have to be patient and teach the history honestly, and so folks can understand it, grasp it, and see how it all connects, not just to baseball, but to the entire American story.
Yeah, well, that leads me to a bit of a sidetrack, what you mentioned about the questions that people ask. So forgive me, but how long have you worked at the museum?
I've been here since 95.
Okay. So over that period, about, I guess it's about 25 years, have you noticed any change in the public's, I guess, awareness might be the best term, just their awareness of Negro League baseball? And I know you say some of the questions kind of get repeated, but do you notice a change over that period of time in the questions you get asked?
Yeah, let me reflect on that, because I think the public has gotten much more in tune with understanding the Negro Leagues. And I think what we have seen on a couple of different levels. One, when I first started, I think there was a sense of not really knowing how broad the Negro Leagues were. I mean, and that's something I had to learn too, but just how broad it was. Maybe they heard of an individual player or two, because those famous names often get repeated and talked about. Maybe they heard of one or two teams, but they folks over time have come to appreciate that there were many teams in many different communities, in some respects paralleling each other from the standpoint of their relationship to the communities which they served and how they connect to the broader game of baseball. Understanding those teams were businesses and not just guys just running around playing ball. This is business. Folks are making money or trying to scratch out a profession in a time where it was difficult for Black people to scratch out any kind of profession. And this was just one avenue for some of them. So that's, I think people are starting to understand and ask more questions about just how broad the history was and how far reaching it was within communities. I think they're starting to understand too that there are levels of play in Black baseball. I mentioned earlier that sometimes all of Black baseball gets lumped together. I think folks are beginning to understand to differentiate between the top level teams and just the community teams. And part of that is because they want to celebrate teams that were from their community and learned about it. But there are certain community teams are not even close to the playing abilities of the other teams, the Negro major teams. They shouldn't get lumped in that way. But as a result, also, there isn't any historical information about all these other community teams. That information is within your community because it wasn't broadly reported on. So you have to go and mine that history. The museum can only do so much of that. as we're trying to keep up, trying to do our best just to get the right stories and things related to the major teams. That's been a revelation for fans as well. It is always interesting to find a fan who is old enough to have maybe witnessed some of these games and teams, especially if they were white fans, but they didn't get a chance to because, again, of systemic racism, racial segregation. They never got the opportunity to be exposed to it, and they come into the museum and in some ways are shocked and surprised that this even went on. It was just something that was completely foreign to them. And they thought they knew the game. They thought they had an understanding of the game. The other part of that, as far as the evolutional questions, we got to a period a few years ago where it was more about, I have this item, what is it worth?
A lot of those Antiques Roadshow.
And it was primarily because of the shows like the Antiques Roadshow as to why that was happening. But now we're getting to understand and differentiate between what is an artifact and what is memorabilia. A glove that could, with provenance, be attributed to a Satchel Paige or Roy Campanella is an artifact. A baseball card signed by Satchel Paige 20 years after he played is a great item, but that's memorabilia. And a lot of people have collections of memorabilia, Wheaties boxes, and all these other things, which are interesting to kind of tell the story of how the Negro Leagues has impacted culture later, but they're not historical artifacts. And people had to understand the difference. People also, within that realm of memorabilia is, you know, T-shirts and caps and even jerseys, because people have been ignorant to what the Negro League's jerseys and things look like. They will see a lot of fashion jerseys and things that the museum has licensed in Maine and call us and say, I think I've got a valuable jersey for you. And of course it is not. If it has a logo on it, our logo on it, because we weren't around then. And if it has a date on it, that actually has a date range of 1920, 1933, that's not something a real baseball team would have worn. And so you'd be surprised at how many of those inquiries we get, because people were obviously looking for money. But we're fortunate, though, that they, over time, our popularity has grown. And they thought to call us. And that's great. But you called us first. We try to solve the question. So at least now we're top of mind. And I think that's a good thing in terms of the evolution of the questions that people are asking. Of course, now, in our day and age, and with the current state of the country and the world, we have been approached about the context of understanding this history within the context of our current state of affairs, especially as it relates to race relations and what role sports can play in that. And I won't say that we're overall authorities on that, but obviously we have content that's instructive, especially if you look back a century ago, because the Negro Leagues was becoming more professional in the moment of similar activities that were happening around the world, a massive influenza pandemic, great explosion of race riots across the country. And it's out of that mix of, among other things, the end of the war and World War I in particular, and other things of which the birth of the Negro Leagues came from. And just to understand that sports is the safe entree, on ramp, if you will, to at least discussing race relations in our cities. We may have different political views or misunderstandings, but we all try to root for our sports teams. And I think a lot of people want to take pride in the sports connections to their community. So here you can learn about the sports side of it. But again, the sport, baseball, is not in a vacuum. These players had to deal with all these other things. So, you know, look, they played great baseball. They were successful. You never heard of them. And look at what else they had to deal with, you know. And then they can reflect on that and say, you know, hey, people are still dealing with some of these same issues today. Isn't that interesting? You know, so that's kind of the role we've been playing in the kinds of questions we've been getting lately as well. And if I can add just one last thing, of course, every April 15th, we always get the question about the lack of African-American presence in the game in terms of Jackie Robinson reflecting on his legacy. Again, a question that we're only limited in our authority to answer other than just explaining the examples of why that might be. But hopefully folks understanding that the Negro Leagues is the platform for which Jackie Robinson could stand in order to make his jump into the major leagues and have the success that he had.
Yeah. And so your answer there, you know, you discussing the, I guess, the more contemporary turn, you know, the questions you're now getting concerning, you know, race relations in baseball. Also, let me just stop myself a moment. I want to also let the listeners know, for those who are unfamiliar, you're referencing the, you know, the flu pandemic. That was over 100 years ago now. That was 1918, killed millions of people around the world. So that was the last really terrible global pandemic. And then, then 1919, that was called Red Summer, where you had riots and massacres, like across the country, D.C., Chicago, parts of rural Texas, Arkansas. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of racial violence. So I didn't even think about that until as you're discussing to make the explicit connection that, there really was an interesting parallel there between our current moment and what was happening a century ago. But
and if I could just add briefly, you know, in East St. Louis, my hometown, mm-hmm. and Chicago in particular, were impacted in Chicago. Was something that the founders of the league, Rube Foster and others, they were witnessing and living through during that time. On top of the other things that were happening in the world, the end of the war and the Black Sox scandal in the World Series with Chicago White Sox during the World Series against the Cincinnati Reds. And these were also things that were influential into the creation of the Negro Leagues. The response to the race riots for Black community was racial pride. And you move into this period of the New Negro Movement and the Harlem Renaissance. Mm-hmm. You still had these debates about how to deal with segregation and integration. The debates between the NAACP side with W.E.B. Du Bois and the Booker T. Washington side and the Tuskegee Institute, they had different visions. And in some place in between is the Negro Leagues kind of influenced by all of these things, which was kind of a self-help kind of thing and a racial pride kind of thing, but also taking advantage of another important aspect of this time period and not necessarily a reason, but a result of, a part contributor to what was happening with the racial tensions was the Great Migration. Of African Americans moving by the millions from the southern places to the northern Midwestern places and from rural to urban altogether. And this critical mass of people were moving into these urban areas, which caused tensions, but at the same time built a fan base for baseball, and particularly Black baseball, which is what people like Foster and his contemporaries wanted. And that's why that helped to spark things. So it's nuanced. It's not a cut and dry thing. And if folks really want to dig into history, they do. Some of our visitors don't want to go that deep down the rabbit hole, but we try to explain that in the museum, and we can always explain it better. But there's just so many layers to the onion. And these undercurrents, to some degree, still continue on today that we hope people will say, oh, that's why this is, or that's why that happened. And why do we need to do this today as opposed to back then? Why can't we do what we want? There's history. You just need to be aware of it.
Yeah. And, you know, another great point about World War One, you know, spurring that great migration, you know, Black folks moving from the South to the North, trying to find jobs, in the wartime factories, but I do want to get to the mission of the Negro League Museum, Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. You know, I imagine your mission hasn't changed dramatically, but how you, I guess, enact the mission, go about it, has changed over time. But just fundamentally, could you explain to people, you know, what is the mission of the museum?
Well, fundamentally, you know, it's to teach African American baseball history and preserve it. And you're right, we've obviously had to evolve in terms of how we deliver that history over time with technology. We've been doing this as an institution now for over 30 years, which is still relatively young compared to the National Baseball Hall of Fame, which was founded, opened in 1939. So we're all learning together still in terms of what to teach and how to teach it and how to present it. I think, though, part of that evolution is to be mindful of the different audiences that we serve. That includes the preschool kid all the way up to the octogenarian, and then how they engage learning at different readiness levels, as is a teacher term. You know,
absolutely.
Some like tech, some don't. Some want to read a lot, some don't. Some understand things at a different level and some don't. So that's something that has evolved over time for us to learn and not just put something up on the wall and pictures on the wall and think, oh, people will be happy about it. Goes also with building computer kiosks that we think kids would love, but then of course, technology is obsolete the moment you install it. So you have to, and we've experienced that. So we have to be more mindful too of those things. But everything has to be intentional about presenting information. And hopefully that's not all fluff. Hopefully, even if it's fluffy, it at least teaches a lesson. And so we just have to be as intentional as we can with our films, with our presentation, even our presentation material on the wall. And then one challenge, among other things that we have, that a place like the National Baseball Hall of Fame has less of, is that we don't have a lot of three-dimensional objects, because a lot of those things have not been saved from the history of the Negro Leagues, because these were tools of the game, not thought of, at least in their contemporary times, as something worthy of preservation. And I don't know when the Hall of Fame began to collect Black baseball objects. I'm sure it's a long time ago, you know, we're all kind of catching up to that. And so there is a dearth of all of that that's not available to us by comparison. So, and because, again, for a long period of time, the story was almost, it was ignored by some and not able to be preserved by others. We're catching up and trying to learn about the story. That's kind of where we are with this whole statistical thing. But we're playing catch up. And a part of that has to do with systemic racism as well. But we're catching up and we're left with some, in many cases, the oral tradition of that history, and just having to interpret that and put that with the photographic history, which has been growing because things have been, more and more things have been discovered. And then the objects kind of get peppered in where they fit. The one important thing that we've insisted on and try to be consistent with is timelines, making sure that folks understand this was the beginning and this was the end, and this is how it fits with everything else happening in the world. So that you understand that this was really a parallel history to Major League Baseball history and to world events. And if you understand that, then you can better visualize and contextualize how that fits in your life or with just your understanding of American history. And you don't necessarily need to, you should be disappointed that you didn't learn it in school, but being angry about it doesn't help now. Let's start learning. And we can give you the tools to help you to begin the basic information. And then if you want to dig deeper, then we'll show you how to dig deeper.
All right. Well, as start to wrap things up here, I do have one question for you that I think is a real interesting one, especially for folks who work at museums. Is there any, which I, and this is also a difficult question, so you need to take a moment to kind of think about it. It's cool.
All right.
But is there any particular artifact or exhibition over the years that you thought did a really good job of just, I guess, hammering home some of these themes you've been talking about? So either one that you're proud of, that was your favorite, that just really, again, exemplified or hit home the mission of the museum?
Well, it's not a difficult question because I get asked the question all the time in every interview almost. Although you asked the question, it was slightly different. But it's, you know,
I'm glad I was able to mix it up.
You mix it up just a little bit, but it's more about what is your favorite item in the museum or your favorite object or things like that. And on the one hand, they're all important to me because they're supposed to be. So I never call a favorite, but there are some that, like you say, I think kind of capture the stories, because this really is about stories. When you don't have a lot of objects and people are used to seeing objects by comparison to other places, then you're more selective about what you put up, and you hope that those objects are able to tell stories that are impactful. So there are at least two or three, but I'll just stick with one. And one is that is not very, when you think about it, it's just a small piece of paper, but it tells a big story. So what is that? So it's a photograph. In the museum, we have a photograph of a young man standing at a train station. It's just a duffel bag. It's in working man's clothes. It's a photograph of him. His eyes are squinting because the sun is shining in his face. And there's not a baseball or a cap or a glove or anything or a bat anywhere in the photo. He's just a young man standing at a train station with a duffel bag. All right. But he is an athlete. And so we do have the original photo, but we copied it and blew it up to be larger in the museum. All right. We were able to get a copy of a letter that accompanied the original photo. And the photo, is a correspondence between two baseball team officials. And they're recruiting this young man to go play baseball in the Negro Leagues. This is the early 1950s. And in the letter, it says, the writer of the letter says, "I do think he will develop into a great player one of these days. I do think he will develop into a great player one of these days." So the writer's prophetic, because this young man does go on, and he's recruited by the Indianapolis Clowns baseball team. Those are the officials who are talking. He is at the train station in Mobile, Alabama, leaving home, at least for the first time, to play baseball. He had been away from home before, but to go play baseball. He's a teenager, roughly about 17 years old. And was a cross-handed hitting infielder, and they switched his hands around and he started tearing up the ball because he had some of the strongest wrists ever. Spends just a few weeks with the Clowns before he is drafted in the early 50s by the Braves organization and goes on to become the all-time home run leader in Major League Baseball, and that's Henry Aaron, right? And so our motto at the museum, since its inception, is discover greatness. This little photo, just a little 4x4 Polaroid photo, is a moment when greatness is discovered. And what our president, Bob Kendrick, often says, and Aaron is his absolute favorite player, is that when visitors see the likes of Aaron and Mays, not just Jackie Robinson, but the caliber of players who in that period, that barrier breaker period, we call it, you think about some of the greatest baseball players of all time who are Black and Latino come out of that period, and you see the quality of players like Henry Aaron coming out of these leagues, clearly they were major leagues. Because that's just the level of talent that was available, ignored for so many years, and now getting that opportunity. And now, of course, in our modern times, being recognized moreover.
Yeah, that is a great, excellent point. If you're getting that kind of talent in the 50s and 60s, finally getting into the AL and NL, imagine who they were missing out on, the previous 30 years. And we know some of those guys already, but like for those folks in that period, I'm sure they were kicking themselves. Some of them probably were, some of them probably weren't, some of them probably happy to keep the barrier up. But I'm sure some of them were like, "Oh, well, you know what? We should have got these Black guys in our league a lot earlier than we did."
I think I can't speak for those folk, but I would even think, no matter what their racial thoughts or mores were, but even a Ruth or a Gehrig or a Williams or even a Bob Feller, who saw the talent, probably knew that the league could benefit from the great players. But see, they were great players. Yep. So they were confident in their own abilities. It's the other guys who were their teammates, who were cup of coffee guys and maybe marginal players. They were the resistant ones because they knew they were going, those were the ones who were going to lose their jobs. And so that pushback was in part helped reinforce segregation. And in the end, they got in and you saw this explosion of talent, maybe the greatest influx of athletic talent in any sport ever, because between 1947 and 1959, when I give presentations, I point out these two stats. Between 47 and 59, that's a 12-year period. 10 out of 12 Rookie of the Years are Black or Latino. Same period, the Most Valuable Player Awards, racked up by Black and Latino players, including Campanella three times, Ernie Banks twice in that period. Only a few white players won the awards in both categories. They just dominated. And some of those more progressive teams, ultimately the Dodgers, who were perennial postseason team until they finally won the World Series, and the Giants got a championship in that period. The Cleveland Indians got a championship in that period. Kind of proved the point that these players needed to be there and could benefit from the team. So it wasn't just a racial thing, and it was a business thing. And it was just forward thinking to be able to integrate baseball. And they proved that they could do it.
All right. Well, I think that's actually the perfect way to wrap up our conversation is what you just said there. So I'm not going to ask any more questions. I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Ray, for spending some time with me for the Negro Leagues, our major leagues. It's been enjoyable hearing you discuss the museum, but also the importance of having a museum in the first place to help tell these stories.
Well, we thank you for the opportunity and happy to come back at any time.
So one last time, I'd like to thank Raymond Doswell for joining us today on the Negro Leagues, our Major Leagues podcast. And again, just want to emphasize how important I think it was, and I'm very glad that he did talk about the varied history that Black baseball has, and that just because, you know, there's one Negro League team didn't mean that it was the same as this other Negro League team or it was the same as this other team in a smaller community. There's distinctions and differences in Black baseball, and it's important to learn those differences because that just fleshes out and fulfills the entire story, the history of this important part of America's history. So hope y'all enjoyed the episode, and we'll see you back here again on the Negro Leagues, our Major Leagues podcast.